Welcome to Dutch Universal Podcast, a universal podcast for grown-ups from the After Dark and Connect world. There may be a few naughty words, so it may not be suitable for kids. Enjoy the show!
Hello and welcome to another episode of That Universal Podcast. I am Nick, and you will not believe who I've got with me this evening. I'm first of all joined by Sinead.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Ryan.
Hello. Good evening. Good morning. Good afternoon.
I was worried then. It was such a pause. I was like, has he already dropped off? That's not a good way of
saying it. I'm in like a Newcastle hotel, so the Wi-Fi, you know, could be patchy.
Oh dear. Oh, so that's why you was asking about the train situation earlier.
Yeah. Well, I also have got Stag Do coming up in Manchester.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's understandable. Look, Craig's not here. We don't have to talk about trains. So it's fine. Just for our American listeners, our train system is currently a mess. That's the polite way of putting it. To the point where last Tuesday, I think it was, Craig messaged me to say that the train company he's using to get down to London for our trip to Disneyland Paris are on strike that day. And we joked in the summer, or I joked to him in the summer and said to him, this will be done by then, right? This isn't going to cause a problem for you. He's like, no, it'll be absolutely fine. And then they announced they're going on strike that particular day. So,
you know what that is? Amazing. That's the amount of times he slags off P-dubs for cursing all of his trips. That's karma.
It's a valid point. It's a valid point. I mean, you know, I had a cursed trip from Disneyland Paris where I was stuck on a train for 3.5 hours. And I'd been with P-dubs, but I wasn't on the train with P-dubs when that happened. So,
right,
you know, it has to happen to all of us at some point. He reckons it's still going to be fine, but he was looking at hotels in the Romford area just in case. But we're not here to talk about Disney World or Disneyland or Disneyland Paris. We are here to talk about Universal. And we should be joined a little bit later on by another guest, but we will see if that materializes. Before then, though, I should really ask what everybody's drinking. So, Sinead, do you have a beverage before bed?
I do indeed. I have a McIver's, I think it's called, cider.
I used to love that show. You used to make, like, you know, you'd give him a matchbox and a bit of gum and like a toothpick, and he'd make a rocket launcher. Fantastic stuff.
There you go.
Don't make sure.
That's a really nice cider as well, apparently. That's a dad joke, but I loved it.
Also, the thing is, the reference is kind of lost now, not because of time, but because didn't they recently remake MacGyver? I never watched it, but I'm sure like in the last few years there was a new series of MacGyver.
See, the only reason I know what MacGyver is because of The Simpsons.
That's the same for a lot of people with Matlock.
Mm.
That's another show that I was fully aware of. I can't say I watched, like, I caught bits of it occasionally when I was around an older relative's house, because, again, target audience. But, yeah, that was very much a thing that was a Simpsons in-joke that kind of got you up to speed with pop culture, right? So,
what the Simpsons did.
Simpsons did it. Ryan, you're up in Newquay.
I am.
The other Newquay, the actual Newquay, the Newquay that they call Newquay when it's Newcastle.
Yeah, or Toon.
Confusing. Toon. On the Toon.
Toon.
Yes. So
I've got a Durham gin and tonic.
A Durham gin and tonic. That's what they serve in the bar, right?
That is what they serve. That they tell me it's a delicacy of the area. I'm not going to argue with someone from Newcastle behind the bar. So,
no, wise.
I said yes on half that, please.
Yeah, I like that. I like the fact that, you know, I mean, because look, the delicacy of that area is not gin, right? It's not even Newquay Brown Ale. It's Greg's, right? It's Greg's.
Very true.
That is it.
I can tell you there are about four or five Greg's within like a probably half a mile radius to where I'm sat right now.
Oh, I would not doubt you. I would not doubt you. Like, it sounds too ludicrous to be true, but it probably isn't. In fact, isn't it true? Like, there's more Greggs in the UK now than McDonald's.
And half of them are in Newcastle.
Yes. Yeah, and I think the only chain that is bigger in the UK now than Greggs or McDonald's. No, I would have actually said. Yes, it's that time again. It's Patreon time. Now, if you don't know what Patreon is, it's a website where you can support content creators and in return get some benefits. For example, if you become a Patreon of ours, you get early release episodes of all our shows, plus exclusive content you can't hear anywhere else. So, that's what we do, and we'd love your support, but these are the people that keep this show happening. And if you become a Patreon, you too can be in this roll call. Here we go. We've got Stephen, we've got Jane and Steve, we've got Todd, we've got Rob, we've got Breaking Dad, David Elliott, Tom, Dave Pelletot. I hope I've said that right, Dave. I apologise if I haven't. Kevin, Dan, Nikki, James Dowling, Crystal Dungeon, Sandy, Paul Kane, Daniel Livingston, Mel Swanick, Kate, Chris, Karen, Lee, Haley, Joseph, and Ryan. Thank you so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And hopefully that Discord channel will be set up soon. I've got it ready to go. I've just got to figure out how to use it. But we'll get there. But if you would also like to support us, then please visit patreon.com/thatpodcast. And if you can't remember the address, there's a handy link in the show notes below. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continued support. I'd have actually said food banks. I think we have more food banks in this country than we do McDonald's or Greggs. Probably both put together. And that just shows you what a shocking state this country is in. But
thanks, Tories.
Thank you, Tories. But as you could hear by, and Sinead, you called it. You said he was going to come in with an aplomb.
Came in with a different name and all.
He does that sometimes. It's very confusing. My wife's account. If you ever wonder what Mrs. Ripley's name was, then there you go. But we are joined as well by Mr. Ripley. This is the most, I was saying before we started recording the show, this is the most bizarre episode because it's the three of you and it's hard to get one of you sometimes on the show, and you're all I've got. The Bulls have abandoned me. Craig's abandoned me. But I mean, it's wonderful that you're all here. So it is great. And actually, I got an email that reminded me today of you, Chris.
Oh wow!
I got an email from Groupon offering me a discounted stay in a Kent castle.
Oh,
and I thought, bloody hell! he's letting some of the wings out. Amazing stuff.
Which castle was it?
I don't know. I didn't open the email. Yeah.
So but your emails aren't working, Chris. You need to get a copy on those headlines.
Well, Kent, argue this with Lancashire, but Kent, we think, has got more castles than any other county in England.
That sounds reasonable. To be fair.
Yeah.
There are quite a few.
I believe that.
England's garden. Of course it's going to have castles. I haven't asked you yet, Chris, what are you drinking? Do you have a drink?
Red Bush tea with Kentish honey.
Ooh. Ooh. Can't exotic. Tea,
yeah. No rum.
No rum. Yes. I bought a drink for Mr. D. It's been in the fridge for like 3 weeks now, waiting for him to come on the show, but we gave him the night off because he's only just got back in the country, and I think it's more important for him to get his body clock in check than to talk about stuff with us. But we are here. We are gathered here today to talk about the Universal Orlando Resort in Orlando, Florida, because both you and Ryan have recently come back from stays at said resort, and have obviously both attended a particularly famous Halloween event that occurs there. So
Mickey's not so scared. Oh, right, wrong one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got time for that as well. But no, so I wanted to speak to you both because did you pop out there? Was this your first times back, or did you not go last year?
It was for me, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, it was the first time for me back in Orlando since, and to Halloween Horror Nights since 2019.
Right. Yeah, because, yeah, last year was a bit of a mess. I know some people, like, wrangled it, but, yeah, still a bit messy. So that's grand. That's what I want to hear about. So really it was to get, not just talk about Halloween Horror Nights, although obviously I want to hear about that as well, but hear about those trips to Universal that you've both had. If it's okay, just because you were first on the line, Ryan, let's hear about yours, and let's start off with how many days did you spend at Universal?
So we did 2 days at the Universal Orlando Resort, which I think in a normal 2-week trip probably wouldn't be enough. Mm-hmm. When you have a 2-year-old, it's more than enough, because turns out there's nothing for them to do.
It's a common complaint, and I mean, Chris, you've not had much chance to do this yourself, have you? Either,
no,
really. Would you agree with Ryan on that?
I was on my own, so.
Oh, okay. You were solo.
2 or 3 year olds with me, so.
You adopted the Nick rule of traveling to holiday destination, entertaining holiday destinations on your time. Yeah.
You have more fun about your family. What can I say? No.
I agree.
I mean, I'm not going to speculate on this podcast, but just to remind everybody, I am going to Disneyland Paris with Craig next week and no one else. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, Ryan, and in fact, I think it was just after we recorded the last episode that they announced, after so many kind of hints and full stories, that pretty much all the kids zone is going in January. Yes. It is part of the park, it's a part of the park that's always kind of suffered, really. And I guess it's down to the size of the parks. You know, there's not, you know, they don't have as much room as Disney World has, so they've got to be more selective in the rides that they have. But from a kid's point of view, there's not much.
They don't have any IP either. Like, a lot of the DreamWorks IPs and the Illumination IPs are kind of feeling like they're on the way out in a lot of respect. I think How to Train Your Dragon is probably not something that I would end up watching anytime soon. I think Minions is the one, and Despicable Me is one that probably will stand the test of time, just based on how it seems to have. I've got quite a few nieces and nephews, and they seem to have still, you know, still watching it. Piper has watched the Minions movie and Despicable Me and has enjoyed it even at kind of 2 years old. But like some of the other DreamWorks and Illumination stuff, I feel like Illumination is the studio that Universal should be going for now rather than DreamWorks. I just don't think there's any big properties that can stand the test of time as it is currently. That's my personal opinion, and just the way that I see how Piper as a 2-year-old girl is engaging with different media.
I'll be honest, Ryan, and I'll just say I would not go on the instincts of a 2-year-old. They're very fickle.
We have watched Frozen 2 about 43 times in the last week.
Right. And you know what? It's funny, because I don't know if you heard our Disney show last week, but I talked about Frozen 2 and the fact that the weird thing is that the focus is still very much on the first film, and I must have watched the first film hundreds, or sat through it, I mean, I was not watching it, hundreds of times. But by the time Frozen 2 came out, I think my daughter's probably watched it in double digits, but certainly not to the extent that she would watch Frozen, because by the time, you know, when Frozen came out, she was born the same year that Frozen came out. So, you know, she was watching that from, you know, I don't know, a year, 2 years old, and would watch it a lot. But by the time Frozen 2 came out, she's much older, and she's obviously, you know, obsessed with books. So she's a big book reader, and she's watching, you know, a variation of the, a big selection of things, rather than just the same thing over and over again, as young children like to do. But I think it's funny that Frozen 2 has been your one whilst Frozen was mine. It's because of, you know, our kids' ages.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting, and I don't regret taking her to Universal. Obviously, I love the parks, but it's very clear how much work they have to do to at that particular age. I think from almost newborn to three is where there's a huge gap, because they can't do anything. So even in Zeus Landing, she couldn't do anything. Like, we got lucky and got on the trolley ride once. She was the height that she was supposed to be. But the second time we went there, they were like, no, she's not the right height. And we were like, here's a photo of her riding it 2 days ago. And they're like, no. And I'm like, but look, here's the photo of her on the height thing. No, you're not coming on. Okay, fine, whatever. Zeus Landing should be accessible to every kid in my mind.
It's absolute madness to me that most kids can't go on the Cat in the Hat.
I mean, that's ridiculous. We didn't get to do that because she wasn't tall enough.
No, most kids aren't. I mean, it's ridiculous. Look, I think it's a good dark ride, but to be honest, does it need to be as wacky and zany as it is? You know, a dark ride really should be sold on the theming of the ride. And I think the theming of the Cat in the Hat is great. I never got off it thinking, wow, what a great dark ride. The stuff that it does, which means that it's height restrictive, doesn't really add enough to it to make it worth their while. They'd be better off like not changing the ride vehicles, but changing the ride system so it's not as violent.
Yeah,
it really doesn't add much to it.
I completely agree. No, it doesn't. I mean, she enjoyed like the carousel and kind of walking through the zoo area and the land in general, like, she loved. But it's just a real shame because that we've got the Dr. Seuss, well, the Dr. Seuss books that are acceptable, at least, we have at home, and she loves them. And to not be able to take her on the carousel and Cat in the Hat just seems like a real missed opportunity, because I think between the ages of like 18 months and three is like prime Zeus territory.
I mean, it's Dr. Seuss.
It goes higher than that as well.
But the thing is, like, Dr. Seuss, you know, illustrations are kind of like crazy and wacky, and they're quite eye catching. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is a land. I mean, you look at everything to do with the land, you know, the way that it's all wonky. The characters they have featured, the statues they have, you know, all of that, all the theming of it is great and is appealing to kids. But then you have all these attractions in it that they can't really go on. It's mad. I don't understand the logic, and I don't understand that, you know, we're 23 years into Islands of Adventure, and that's still the biggest problem with it, with Zeus Landing, not with the islands itself.
It's very strange. I mean, it's crazy that the one thing that she was able to do really is E.T., which frustratingly she absolutely loved, and I had to buy an E.T. plush.
We've all been there.
Very happy.
Yeah, we've all been there. Some of us have had to buy ludicrously expensive lounge flies because of people's love of E.T. It turns out. Yeah. But on just going back to that, this show is already as wacky as Dr. Seuss' story. So obviously we know Kidzone is going. Now we've got on the theme park whisperer. So, I mean, Chris, what whispers have you heard about Kidzone?
DreamWorks, wasn't it?
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, DreamWorks Illumination, you know. There was a list of, I can't remember where it was now, but there was a list of potential properties. I think Trolls was right up there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Donkey and Shrek meet and greets going away, isn't it?
It's coming back, I think.
Yeah, my understanding was that was going to be put back, moved from the current location to what they're doing in Kids Zone. So it will close for a period of time, but it will reopen in a possible
in a matter of weeks. You mean?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it all depends on what they're doing in that land, right? I mean, in theory, that's a thing that they can lift and shift, or they can certainly, you know, because they've already got everything ready to go. Even if they're building a new area for it, that should be your first priority. But
the other thing as well is that area, Kids Zone, is quite critical for Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah.
So if they close it all off to do the construction work, I wonder how that will affect Halloween Horror Nights.
Well, and we've seen this before, right? Where, you know, they've been doing construction areas, and then people have had to be, you know, they've had to move everything around to accommodate it. So you have to take a slightly longer walk, or you know, walk in a backstage area to get to where you need to go. So it's happened before, but yes, it's a massive inconvenience when they do that. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I wonder if what they'll do is they'll start construction, because, you know, Universal are quite quick on the construction front, right? I mean, that's the one thing they've got over Disney. So I wonder if they'll go hammer and tongs in the new year to start erecting buildings or whatever it is they're going to be doing, taking out the existing rides, and maybe have it ready, not the land ready, but have it ready for Halloween Horror Night season to at least be walkable. Because all you got to do is put some walls up to kind of disguise what you're doing, right? And just open the walkways up.
I think it's very strange that they're not using Pokemon for that area, because Pokemon is obviously huge. We haven't seen any rumblings of it coming to Epic, certainly not in the first few years. And they could keep PT in its current capacity, introduce him as 80s Mon or something like that, you know, keep it in with the Pokemon lore.
I mean, that'd be a crossover for the ages to get ET in Pokemon. But I'm not sure.
I'll message my mole in Universal right now. I'll see what he says.
Excellent. I mean, the thing is, right, I would disagree on the IP front, because I think if you look back at early DreamWorks, you know, there's a lot of films that never had anything else. So I'm thinking things like Shark Tale, that one about the was it Guardians of something? But the one where they had the mascots,
Fun Christmas, and mascot things.
So there was a lot of films like that which didn't really have anything else going for them. But then you've got things obviously like Shrek. We've got a new Puss in Boots film that's coming out this Christmas, which no one seems to know anything about.
Well, that's my problem. Films making money anymore? Is that Puss in Boots film really going to make any money? I know Shrek is obviously still massive. But is it is Shrek massive, or is it just because we all grew up with Shrek? The kids growing up today excited to see Shrek in a theme park? I don't know. It's about
Piper won't be able to tell you because she's two. It's a toughie, because on the one hand, I don't disagree because yes, especially some of their IPs aren't. I think what they've been very canny in recent years is, especially with things like Trolls, which got brought up earlier. You know, you had a film, then you had one of those Christmas special things that they do every now and again for a big property, followed by an animated series, followed by another film, followed by another animated series as well. So there's all this stuff kind of going on, and it's all quite easily available. I mean, I think the difference now to what we had growing up to what there is now is, you know, most of this content is on Netflix or, you know, depending on your locale, different streaming service. But in the UK, you know, there's all number of DreamWorks and Illumination stuff on Netflix. So this stuff now is very easily available. And, you know, when kids are kind of flicking through and they see a big green ogre thing, they'll be interested. You know, what's this about? Or they see Minions. they're pretty familiar with what that is. So they'll watch that. Old Trolls, it's bright and colourful. I think a lot of their IPs are still going to be there. And I think the other thing as well is look at Disney. When we look at Disney World, look at the IPs that are there. You know, Snow White, Pinocchio, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. You know, there's lots of uses of IP that are very old. And no one seems to care about that. So what I mean is no one seems to care that they're old IPs. They're considered classic IPs. Kids don't walk in there and go on a Snow White ride and go, well, what the hell's this? They just get immersed in it. So I think as long as you do a good enough
job. I feel like
they
kind of do, though, because Snow White ride is terrifying.
Well, see, R1 is Sinead, and I say R1 because our home park is Disneyland Paris, but obviously in Disney World, they've got the Seven Dwarfs Mine Coaster.
Yeah,
which is a totally, you know, it's a much more sensitized version of it. I mean, look, I've told the story a number of times of going on Pinocchio, that Snow White, then Pinocchio, as the first attractions I ever did in a Disney park at the age of like 9 and being scared shitless because they were terrifying to me. And I'd seen the films. But I think there are some decent IPs that as long as they are freely available, and as long as they do spin-offs and stuff, I mean, How to Train Your Dragon is a really popular series of books. The books have nothing, almost nothing to do with the films.
The mole has responded. This is it, you know. He said, all focus is currently on Epic. Mm-hmm. However, not a lot is being said about Kids Zone. It's a small team, so that means probably leaks are going to be harder. He said, I know that they had a design for this area for Pokemon, but could now be DreamWorks.
I reckon whatever goes in. So
that's literally what we've just been saying.
Yeah, I reckon whatever goes
is
in.
Is the mole on this call, Chris?
No.
He's secretly in the background. I think whichever one they go with, we will see Epic. I think that's all it's going to be. I think whatever they decide is going to be going in here was probably earmarked for Epic and is now.
Yeah, it'd be leftovers from Epic, definitely. Yeah. It'd be something that they've designed or agreed in Epic.
And the thing is, we know there's a DreamWorks area earmarked for Epic.
This is my point. Like, we know that like quite a large portion of Epic is DreamWorks. So
what we do know so far is that what that includes is How to Train a Dragon. It's Kung Fu Panda. Right? They're two IPs that I only just mentioned How to Train a Dragon. So we haven't talked about Trolls. Well, they haven't talked about Trolls. They haven't talked about Shrek. They haven't talked about Puss in Boots. There's all these other things that we could do as well.
There is an element of, does the IP really matter more so than the ride? Because, like, I think if, to use Seven Dwarfs Mine Train as an example, I don't think anybody really cares that's Snow White. It's just a fun ride to go on. Like, nobody's going on it for the theming. They're going on it because it's a fun coaster that's, like, suitable for everybody. Much like, I highly doubt Ryan's 2-year-old actually gave a flying shit about E.T. It was just a fun thing to go on, and the colours were there. So I think there is an element of how much does the IP matter.
A.T. about 50 times in that day.
Yeah, but the point is, Ryan, is that she went on that attraction. She hadn't seen the film, right?
No, I completely agree. And you know what? Give me a Shrek boat ride over any kids' ride that Universal got currently, because that's they need boat rides. They need slow moving rides that kids will enjoy. And I completely agree. Give me a Shrek boat ride. Give me a Trolls boat ride. Whatever it is. I mean, that I can take my children on.
How many people have actually seen Song of the South?
Oh, don't open that can of worms. I had a massive argument online about that the other day. It's probably why Disney Dream Girls don't want anything to do with me anymore.
Before, you know, the controversy, no one had actually seen the film. I mean, it's very hard to get hold of.
I have actually seen it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we've talked about this, Chris, right? It used to get shown on TV.
Yeah, so I remember watching it distinctly as a kid.
I don't remember it on TV. I remember having a VHS copy of it.
I remember watching it at my nan's house as a kid, and I remember it distinctly.
Yeah, I want to say the BBC showed it quite regularly around Christmas time. I could be wrong on the time of year, but I definitely recall seeing it. Now, I can remember the bit I remember of Song of the South is actually on another Disney video that I had that was advertised in one of those sing-along videos.
Oh, yeah. They were everywhere.
Yeah, and they used to use a clip of Zippity-Doo-Dah on that.
Zippity-Doo-Dah, yeah.
So that was the thing I mainly remembered. But there's a guy I follow on Twitter I really like, and he made a video a few years ago talking about the whole controversy, why it's not going to be on Disney Plus, all this kind of stuff. And he talks about a film, and he talked because he owns a copy of the film, and he owns the original book. And, you know, talking about obviously the differences between the book and the film, and also what people think the film's about and what the film's actually about. And unless you live in a southern state in America, where you can still buy it quite freely on a bootleg DVD, you're right, not a lot of people watch it. I mean, how many times when they first announced Splash Mountain was going to be closing and going to be reopening as Tiana's,
so long ago now, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Of course it was. It was a Disney announcement. Of course it was a long time ago.
Christ, but I can't even remember when it was.
But when they announced, oh, I know exactly when it was. It was about 6 weeks after George Floyd, because it was like Disney's call to arms for Black Lives Matter.
Yeah,
but when that happened, when that announcement came out and people were in uproar about it, how many times did you see people turn around and say, I didn't even know it's based on Song of the South?
It was
utterly bizarre, because Splash Mountain opened in 89. Around 88, 89 was when Disney said, you know what, we're not going to release this on video anymore. We're gonna remove it from distribution. We're not going to allow the broadcast rights for TV, and we're not going to re-release it in theatres. Right? That all happened at the same time. So they were making this ride based on this thing that they'd already decided, actually, we want to distance ourselves from it because it's problematic. Mm. And that was in the 80s.
What? Yeah, but hang on. What year did it come out?
Oh, it was like 1944, 42.
Right, Go and read the Times of London review.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
Even that review says it's racist.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
The review literally came out a week after the film was released.
Either way, the main point is that the IP doesn't matter. Now, what I will say when it comes to Universal is if they're just going to phone it in and use screens, which we have seen in recent years, then yes, you need the IP, because if kids are just basically going to be watching a TV in a giant moving vehicle, then it probably wants to be something that they actually want to watch.
But again, at the same time, once you watch it and enjoy it, you're probably then going to want to find out what it's about. So it still works.
Just give me Shrek's swamp boat ride, the meet and greet, job done. I don't care. Just give me something that I can take pride in.
With jokes all the way through that rip on Disney.
Yeah. What else?
Smashes the boats look like donkey.
Oh,
massive donkey boats. I'd love that.
Sounds like an episode of the Patreon show, funny enough. It wasn't the way I was expecting it to go. So let's go back. So you was only there for 2 days, so it's obviously very short, but in your opinion, was the complete right length for you because of having a 2-year-old that could barely go on anything? So here's the thing, because I know obviously you did use this. This would have been your first holiday you'd have really had to use, Kids Swap or whatever the Universal equivalent is called. And how was your experience using that?
I thought it was a piece of shit.
Now, Ryan, can I just, I don't like it. You know, I know I'm hosting this show, but I'm really uncomfortable when people sit on the fence about things. I just want to know, you know, good or bad, you know, how you really feel.
Now, what I'll say is the facilities, once you're inside the attraction, like there's a nice room, like little fountains in the room, there's a TV, it's great. But you have to take your, in my case, very young 2-year-old daughter through the queue of Velocicoaster with moving raptors before you get the chance. I'm not being funny, but that is freaking mental.
Whereas my 3-year-old would probably adore doing that.
Yeah, I'm like, when she gets a bit older, she'll love it. But and thankfully, she's asleep, because if she'd woken up when those raptors were moving about, she would have shit her pants.
Can you imagine? It's like when people get stuck on like Men in Black, like on the last ride of the day before Halloween Horror Nights sets up, and then they have to exit through the park whilst Halloween Horror Nights is happening. I've seen it so many times.
The thing is, it doesn't make sense to me. In because I know from like Craig's talk before about them having to child swap. Funny enough, Men in Black was one of the ones that he referenced. Doing that, so, you know, in this nice room you can chill out and all this, so I thought that was good. Now
it's great. I agree
I don't know what the what it's like at Disney World, because I've never been there to do it, but I've done it at Disneyland Paris, and the way you do it there is you go to the exit of the ride, you say that you want to do a kid swap, and they say, okay, there's a bunch of kids, which one do you want? But no, you tell them, you know, and they can normally tell, because your child is normally way too small for the ride. And we did this at Space Mountain. So you go to the exit of the ride, you say, want to do a kid swap? And they say, that's fine. Who's going first? So you say, you know, choose whoever's going first. And then they wait there until there's an available slot. And then they let the person through. They go on the ride, they come out, you swap with them, and you do the same thing. And that works pretty well. The problem with that attraction is that I don't think there's cover. And there might be a little bit of cover by the exit of that ride. So there's, you know, if it's a not very nice day, then you've got to be, you've got to time it right. But, you know, but that seems to me a much better way of doing it, because then you avoid the queue area.
Which, I think Disney World, someone has to queue.
Right.
And then the other person goes in the lightning lane. I mean, I'll be honest, I think that's how it works in Disney World. As I said, like when I did the Disney show, we had a dash pass this time, so we used lightning lane the whole time. But I'm pretty sure that's how it works at Disney. But yeah, at Universal, you know, at least the rides that we did, we had four adults, two children under three. And every time they had to stand in line with us the whole time. And you know, that would include the Mummy. We didn't, you know, we took it in turns that one after Velocicoaster. But like, really taking a two-year-old into the Mummy queue, taking a two-year-old into the Velocicoaster queue, it's very clear that whoever designed those just didn't consider child swap at all.
Nor should they.
Now, the room itself is fantastic. And I understand it's definitely an afterthought, and I get it. The room that they've built inside Velocicoaster queue, great. Like, can't fault it at all. Comfy seats, screens showing the Jurassic World cartoon on Netflix. Really, really good. But they shouldn't be having, the kids should not be having to queue in that when they're that young.
And the thing is, like, the one thing that I mean, I know Disney do it as well, but I always think Universal do it better. Like, I do think the queue areas are really good and get you into the spirit of the ride. So, you know, Kong is another one that you don't want to take a kid through. I mean, especially when, and I know they don't do it very much now, but, you know, occasionally they have a scare actor, don't they, in the queue?
Yeah.
So you don't want a kid walking through that. They're not going on the attraction. But the thing is, that shouldn't be a problem. They should be able to have their, you know, immersive queues that are really well themed, and you should be able to do child swap without that being a problem. The problem there is that they're expecting you to go through the main queue, and they really should. There should be, you know, whether you go through the exit or, you know, another door, whatever, that allows you to do that. It's not queue jumping.
I'd be happy to say, come back in. Yeah, give me a return time, and I'll wait there however long it is to wait and do it that way. But, you know, and as I said, like, that would be my main concern with it. I totally appreciate that Universal is not a young family park, and we decided to take Piper to that park. But at the same time, you can't exclude that audience from experiencing your attractions. And, you know, as Velocicoaster was absolutely incredible, and I'm glad we got the chance to do it. But it was a real shame that that's how they'd implemented the child swap.
Sure. So, Chris, I'm going to just pass over to you. So, mainly because you went solo, so a lot of that stuff you couldn't really give me an answer for. But Ryan just mentioned Velocicoaster. Obviously, Velocicoaster is the main new ride since the pandemic. So this year was a lot of people's first time in the UK being able to go and to ride it. Did you go?
I was there for a long weekend. I didn't go to Islands of Adventure.
Oh.
I did go to Epcot, though.
Oh. Yeah.
And I did ride Guardians.
Oh. I ran out of bowls. That was as high as I could go. We're not talking Universal, but Disney. But I want to hear about it anyway. So go on. What was Guardians like?
I felt so sick afterwards.
Oh wow!
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, I loved it. I didn't feel nauseous at all.
No, I think that's now I know I'm old now.
It does hit us.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said before that Forbidden Journey now, that's the ride that makes me feel green. For Craig, it was The Simpsons, although he didn't feel great coming off Forbidden Journey either when we went. But yeah, it was the first time I ever took an anti-sickness to go to a theme park. The age of 35.
Well, this is it. Forbidden Journey, I mean, I do sometimes feel a bit sick at the end of that, but it usually goes really quickly. The Guardians one, I had to go and have a sit down.
Really?
Oh, bless. Obviously, you know, there wasn't much for Piper to go on, but were there other things that she could see and enjoy?
We went to see the Bourne Stuntacular, which was new.
Every 2 year old is wanting to see the Bourne Stuntacular.
Let me tell you what she did. She fell asleep for the entire show. That's not even a joke.
Was that, to be fair, you know, Pete Ups was talking about his son last week falling asleep during World of Colour. So it happens, I guess. No matter how loud something is, kids will still find a way of doing it. What did you think of Bourne Stuntacular?
I thought the way they did it was clever, but I think it's one of those things that was massively overhyped. I think I was expecting it to be better than it was. To be totally honest, I think I'd probably give it like a 6, maybe a 7 out of 10.
A worthy replacement to T2, or?
No, I don't think so. I think practically, in terms of like the things they're doing with the show, are really, really clever. But I think Terminator's just got, it's nostalgia, isn't it? The Terminator's got more nostalgia for me than the Bourne does, to be totally honest. So I think it probably is a better show. It certainly looks more up to date, but you know, nostalgia was my nostalgia hat on. It's very hard to take that off. I thought T2 was better, but I enjoyed it. I'll go and watch it again.
Well, there's something.
I'll be honest and say the Bourne films are good, but then you know, I might rewatch them every 6 or 7 years, but that's it.
Mm. What about you, Chris? Do you get to see the Bourne Stuntacular?
No, it wasn't open during Halloween Horror Nights.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, not that I don't think it was.
No, I think the last show is like mid-afternoon.
People probably doing double duty. Fair enough. Was there anything else, Ryan, from the Universal portion of the trip that you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't think so, outside of Horror Nights. No, I don't think so.
What about you, Chris? Because I'm trying to think about what was new. Like, did you go on Hagrid's last time?
No, I didn't go to Ireland, so I didn't do Hagrid's either.
So you've still not done it at all? Oh wow!
No.
Bless your cotton socks. Look at you being a trooper, being a good boy, not going all the attractions out the fan by. All right, so let's talk about the thing that you definitely went out there for, Chris, and the thing that you kind of also went out there for, Ryan, as well.
The McDonald's adult Happy Meal.
Ah, you know what? They had they had the Halloween buckets in Canada, and I was trying to convince my daughters to have a Happy Meal so we could get one. I was shouted down for wanting a bit of tat to come home with, so we didn't get one of those. But they didn't have the adult Happy Meals in Canada.
Well, Adam the Woo did this video where he drove around a load of McDonald's near to Walt Disney World and couldn't.
Is that
get
a collective any. Noun for them? McDonald's is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm asking the question. I don't know.
McDonald's is.
McDonald's is. A group of McDonald's.
McDonald's. And you couldn't get any.
Right.
So I just ordered it off of Uber Eats. And they came with it.
I see what I found on Uber Eats. I couldn't order on Uber Eats because I didn't have an American phone number. But one of the places that I could order on Uber Eats was Mr. Beast.
Oh, Beast Burger.
Yeah, now I'm obviously an old man, so I shouldn't know who Mr. Beast is, but I do. And I was like a bit surprised. I was like, oh, they've got one of these in Canada. And then when I got home, I found out that they've got them over here as well, because it's not an actual thing. I don't know if you know this.
He franchises his name, doesn't he?
He franchises his name and the menu. Yeah. And then any restaurant can pretty much just say, yeah, we sell Mr. Beast menu. And then you can order whatever you want. So really, really bizarre. How was your adult Happy Meal, Chris?
It was as good as I thought it would be, which is not very.
Yeah.
I mean, having it delivered by Uber Eats, McDonald's is usually lukewarm at the best of times.
Oh, what is it about McDonald's where, actually, I might tell my story later on about what happened last night, but what is it about McDonald's just in general where any other takeaway gets you pretty warm, at least, if not hot, and yet McDonald's is always on the verge of like being, need to be cooked again, even reheated.
The thing is with McDonald's or Uber Eats in Florida is that if you're in Kissimmee and you order Uber Eats, they'll go and get your burger from Tampa. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's
and
like,
they deliver it on a bike.
With you in 45 minutes, and that's just the journey time.
Yeah. So somehow your fries always end up being wet when they come in from Uber Eats. I don't understand it. What do they do to those fries?
I made a big boo-boo last night. Right. So I went to see a film, which I can't talk about here because it's a Disney film. And on the way home, I was like, everyone was out. So I had to have dinner by myself. So I was like, you know what? There's a Five Guys here. And there's a McDonald's where I am. So I had a hot food bag with me. So I was like, okay, I'll just get that. So I got my fries from Five Guys because they're veggie options and shit. Nice. And I got a McPlant burger from McDonald's. Put them in a hot bag, took them home. Got them home and I'm like, okay, it's actually they're pretty warm, but I'm gonna just reheat it. So I put them in my little oven in the bags, put it on the reheat mode, and assumed that the heat was from the fan at the back. When I came down from changing upstairs, I was like, I can smell burning, and that's because my Five Guys fries were alight. Because the heating element was actually touching the bag and I'd caused a small fire in my oven. Great times. The fries Incredible. Survived, just about. Okay.
You were sober when this happened as well.
Stone cold. I haven't had an alcoholic beverage in about 2 months, yeah. Right, so let's speak about the main event. So I'm going to come to you first, Chris. I'd say controversy surrounding this year, before the event and during the event. You know, people were moaning about the choices of houses before the event happened, and people were moaning about some of the other houses once the event took off. Obviously, it's not all negative. You know, people did enjoy themselves as well, thankfully, but it certainly felt to be a bit of a mixed bag. So what was your experience of Halloween Horror Nights?
Well, it definitely was a mixed bag. And I do feel as well that it, I think Epic is drawing all their attention at the moment. I mean, if you look on their vacancies page on their website for jobs, I mean, they're trying to hire buttload of people just to get Epic over the line. So let alone Kids Zone project, or you know, the what they call it, the umbrella events, you know, the seasonal stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Halloween Horror Nights definitely suffered with that. It's probably also been suffering as well because of, I would imagine, budgets are probably tighter this year. Because of obviously COVID. I mean, there was no, I don't know what it was like when you went, Ryan, but it was, we went on a, I think we went on a Wednesday. And it was just it was absolutely rammed.
Yeah, we did a Wednesday as well, and it was the same. It was ridiculous.
It's funny, isn't it? Was just,
unbearable.
I say weekdays, but I mean, I think the earliest I've ever gone is a Thursday. But if you go, and obviously when I go for a long weekend, which starts on a Thursday for me, when I go, like, it's definitely noticeable Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the difference in crowd attendance. Mm-hmm. And then normally drops down a bit on the Sunday as well. But the Friday is normally the busiest, followed by the Saturday, which is almost as busy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that can flip-flop. Like, sometimes the Saturday is more busy. But, I mean, they're both, Fridays and Saturdays are normally really ridiculously busy. And yet, you know, the weekdays are normally quieter. Do you think might be because of the hurricane, potentially?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, put it this way. I got there about 6:30, and I was literally a few cars behind as they decided to started to use the backup garage. So the main garage was full at that point. So we [S2] Right. [S1] Were all being filtered into the other garage. And then that was, you know, when I came back, towards the end of the evening, that was in itself, you could tell that was absolutely full up as well. So that, wow. I don't know if they've ever got to capacity with those carriages, but it wouldn't have surprised me if they had.
Wow. So did you said it was a solo trip in a sense of not being with the family. Were you there as part of a group, or was you just experiencing it as a single person?
No, I was doing my lone wolf, trying to get around as much as I could. I mean, within minutes of it opening, it seemed as though every house was a 90-minute wait.
Wow.
I mean, I had Express Pass this time. Express Pass, I don't think I waited any shorter than half an hour with an Express Pass. It was always longer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been my experience with Express as well. Like, I mean, obviously it must save you time. If those listed times are spot on, but yeah, it's never a Express is probably not the right phrasing for it anymore.
That's right. Well, I went, for four, no, it's 5 days in total, but for 3 actual days of doing anything. I went in what I call the Scottish week, which is the half term just before the English, so that week just before. It used to always be when the Scottish schools always used to break up earlier. So when you'd be on holiday, you'd hear lots of Scottish accents, but I didn't hear any at all this time.
Well, you missed Mr. D. That's probably why.
Yeah, comes from Sussex. What are you talking about?
I went early, well, probably closer to mid-September on the Wednesday, and it was still crazy busy, but I think the express wait times were about 15-20 minutes.
Yeah, it's quite a big difference. So all right, so I guess the obvious question, Chris, is did you get through all the houses?
I got through most of them.
Wow.
I wasn't feeling particularly well.
You eat McDonald's. I'm not surprised.
That's probably where it all started. Yeah. I think I had a very, very heavy cold. I don't think it was anything worse than that. And I had COVID tested. It was all negative. But I was just felt so... I wasn't sneezing so much or anything like that. It was just real sheer fatigue, which was really, really a shame. Yeah. So I don't know. It must have been something off the aeroplane, I imagine.
So what did you not do?
I didn't do Descendants of Destruction. Okay. Didn't do Blumhouse, didn't do any of the shows.
Okay. Fair enough. What did you make of the houses that you did get through? And I appreciate that your view on this is probably going to be a little bit skewed if you're not feeling particularly great.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because I didn't have time to go a second time. I definitely think the houses in the scare zones looked as though they just needed a bit more finesse.
Right.
Just needed a bit more budget, a bit more attention. I think my favourite house was the Monsters House, but even that, I thought left a lot to be desired.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I don't want to be too negative, but I wouldn't say it was one of my favourite years, put it that way.
Hmm. Interesting. What about you, Ryan? Like, how many nights did you manage to make it there in the end?
Well, because obviously we were there with two kids with our friends as well. So I had the night off. Is how I like to call it. I mean, it's not really a night off because you're in the parks from, and we were at the park all day, and then Ben and I stayed there until I think it was about 1 o'clock, and then obviously you have to get up early the next day. Regardless if you're going to a park or not, because you've got young children.
Yeah.
But it absolutely smashed it down for like 70% of the night, which meant all of the scare zones didn't open until about 10.
I hate that when that happens.
It's really annoying. Yeah. We did every house because we had Express. We managed to do every house. And I kind of agree. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a Halloween Horror Nights veteran. This was only my third year of going. But this was definitely my least favorite by quite a distance.
Hey, look, if you're some people, being there more than 2 years means you're more of an expert than Chris on this subject. So, you know, don't be quite so modest. Not naming names,
but nothing. I didn't really get scared, to be honest. And I'm quite. I mean, I do jump scare quite easily, but nothing really scared me. I do think they overly packed people in. It was proper conga this year, like worse than the other 2 years I've been, and it just meant that you saw the scares coming a mile off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a real problem that they've got. It would have been better if they left a little bit of spacing. I know that's not really possible nowadays because the event is so rammed, but it did lessen the experience. And it was Ben's first time going, and he enjoyed it. He's a carpenter by trade, so he was basically looking at houses for all the details they put in.
Sure.
And he just doesn't get jump scared, so he wasn't bothered by the scares at all. But he'd come out going, "Oh, that was a really cool detail there, this particular thing." And I came away a little bit disappointed that there wasn't really anything that scared me. That's really why I go now. I did not the first time I went, but now I kind of go for those jump scares and to have a bit of a kind of, I know it's false, but a bit of fear from it. There wasn't really any of that. I enjoyed a couple of the houses, maybe two or three, but they were lacking like something, a big IP this year. I know they had Halloween and the weekend is, you know, the weekend was, I thought was a great house actually. Surprised me. I didn't think it was going to be good, but I think probably up there in my top two. But outside of like maybe two, three houses, I thought it was a bit of a letdown. I think you can definitely tell that they're focusing on Epic Universe.
They had Evil Dead, apparently had Evil Dead lined up as a house.
Really?
Very, very last knockings, something happened and it had to be rethemed. But even if they had Evil Dead there, which they've had Evil Dead there before, but even if they had that there, I don't necessarily think that would have been an IP that would have brought a vast number of people in.
Well, I think if you look at the houses they had this year, like there's normally one house, and obviously for you, Ryan, Stranger Things was the one that first drew you to the event. There's normally that brings in the casual, and that's the person who may have expressed interest before but didn't, you know, not enough to pull the trigger, or just somebody that had no idea about the event but was suddenly interested because something that they really enjoy is going to be focused. I mean, I don't think there's anything bigger in that, you know, culturally like that in that genre than Stranger Things. And I think this year the anchor probably was The Weeknd, which, I mean, that was the house that I was really excited by when I announced it. But it's a different thing because, you know, a lot of people don't associate horror with The Weeknd. You know, if you're only familiar with his actual music and not his music videos, then I can understand that. For those,
I thought it was a really strong house, actually, from a horror perspective.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, and I was saying this to, I remember speaking about this with Craig, and I said, like, you know, if you've seen his music videos, then you would understand why this works, or why this could work as an IP. But I don't think he's a strong enough kind of like pop culture phenomena like Stranger Things is to draw in enough of that kind of more casual crowd or cater to that horror crowd because they want to see a big horror franchise. And I think the problem with Halloween is, you know, like you said before, Chris, you know, it's not the first time they've done Halloween. You know, we've had various versions of, you know, the original films, the Rob Zombie films have been featured, but it's an IP that's been done. And I think if you've done, you know, even if you've done like, you know, Halloween 2 or the Rob Zombie ones, whatever, it's Michael Myers. You've seen it before. It's not going to make you jump in there because they're doing Halloween again. I'm really shocked that they went for the original Halloween and still they've not touched this new franchise at all, have they?
Well, there's a reason behind that. They were told a while ago, and this was reported in the press as well, that the big chiefs at Comcast have said they just want to reduce the amount of external IP across the board as much as possible. So you may look at it and you think, well, how is that so? Well, Halloween does come under that banner. There is a universal deal there with that particular franchise. And even The Weeknd, for example, releases music under a banner that is owned by Comcast. So they're very much going down this route now, which I think is a bit of a shame. But I still think they do need that marquee IP that kind of ties it all together and brings people through the door.
Well, for me, like next year, obviously they've already announced Chucky. I'm a massive fan of the Chucky franchise, and I wasn't, and it's still a bit up in the air whether I'll be able to or not, but that was a house announcement that actually would tempt me to go to book for a weekend.
It's also universal property, isn't it?
I think it is.
Is it?
Well, I don't know what the, because this, isn't this another one that's kind of tied up in some kind of legal wranglings? But
because it airs on the Sci-Fi Channel, doesn't it?
Well, I was going to say, so this Chucky series that they do is on USA and Sci-Fi. It's on both of them. And they're both Comcast networks or channels. So this new series is, you know, for them. I don't know if they actually own the rights to Child's Play, but they're definitely doing something with the character of Chucky, if you understand what I mean there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A bit like, so Halloween, I can't remember who the producer is on that, Chris, but whoever the producer is.
The Akkads.
Yes. So I think it was the dad had done like the first Halloween or been involved. So that, now it's like the son. So that franchise is owned by them. Mm. And this trilogy that they've done, now that's, you know, being completed, the rights have reverted back to them. So there'll be a new Halloween film. It won't be through Blumhouse. It won't be through Universal. No. But that franchise will continue.
just to say as well that I'm fairly certain that the Chucky house that they've announced for next year will be based on the TV series.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, which is released through Universal NBC.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the second season yet, but the first season I really enjoyed. I wasn't expecting to, but I did enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, I've not checked any of it out. I was speaking about this with Sinead, who is now disappeared. We could swear more now. I'm joking, we could swear in front of Sinead. But yeah, I was talking about this the other week. I was never like a massive fan of the Child's Play films. I watched a few of the kind of later entries, like the Bride of Chucky, when Tiffany came into it, and Seed, I think I saw as well at the time. But I mean, I've never really been big into the franchise, but I've heard a lot of good things about the series, so I should try and check it out at some point. I just need to find it, because I know it's not over here.
It's on Now TV, the first series.
Okay.
The middle Child's Play films were released under Universal, and then the latter, straight to DVD ones, were Universal.
Yes.
So yeah, those two most recent movies, I thought they were much darker in tone, like the original were, I suppose, in a way. I thought they were pretty decent.
I think the originals, like the Child's Play films, were quite campy, but that's the point of what I was saying. So there was three Child's Play films. Everything since then, including stuff that's been released via Universal, hasn't been called Child's Play.
Yeah,
you can think, you know, it wasn't called Child's Play Bride of Chucky, it was called Bride of Chucky. Seed of Chucky,
interestingly,
Chucky
without spoilers. In the series, there are characters from Child's Play appearing.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Isn't Child's Play the name owned by MGM though?
Yeah, that's what.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I think as well, it's like when they do like box sets and stuff like that. Sometimes why it's not complete because it's you know, bits of owned by different. You know, you have to sort things out. I know that there's been like a complete box set, but I know that it was kind of like an amalgamation, which they sometimes do. Bill and Ted went through a similar one recently because the original Bill and Ted film was owned by one company. Bogus Journey was owned by a different company. So for years, you couldn't buy them as a collection. But later years they have. So, you know, whether the rights have been sold on or whether they've come to an agreement, whatever. But yeah, this stuff kind of ties it up. But it's weird, isn't it, that we've had an announcement this early, because obviously Chucky was featured at the event in by ways of some really weird looking food. But I mean, this is surely, Chris, the earliest we've ever had a house announcement.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there was a theme announcement a couple of times at the end of previous Halloween Horror Nights. Most famously in 2014, at the very, very end of that, on the last night, they announced Jack would be back for 2015.
Yeah.
But my point is, this year is everything, every single house is essentially a Universal IP.
Yeah.
Or an original, because there were
original.
More originals this year than we've had in more recent years. And so that also kind of makes sense, I guess, as well. But yeah, okay. Thought that was quite interesting. So you said you enjoyed.
I mean, if Evil Dead had come back, you know, didn't that have a deal with the Sci-Fi Channel?
The
most recent series was it?
The Ash series was owned by Starz. But I think I can't remember if they're part of the family or not. Like, it's another one of those subscription channels, but I'm not sure who owns the majority of it. But again, we've seen, it wasn't the last Evil Dead film Universal when they did that reboot.
Possibly.
So again, another one that's kind of tied up in things.
So really then, if you say, some people say to me, oh, what's coming next year? Well, it's all going to be Universal properties again.
Mm.
I think so. If we look carefully at what they've got, elsewhere, we might be able to actually work out what's possibly coming.
Certainly from an IP perspective, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine it's a shoo-in now that we'll have a Monster's House. Because that's obviously something that they've been doing for the last few years, but it's what they're most famous for. I think going back to the earlier conversation we were having about Kidzone and, you know, what DreamWorks RPGs and stuff like that, Universal doesn't seem to have a lot of horror IPs. Now, the big hitters like your Freddy's, your Jason, your Halloween's, that they're not going to be in-house. They're not going to be IPs that they have the rights to.
Well, so, one thing I will say is The Weeknd being quite a successful house. I mean, most people you speak to say it is probably top of their list. It does make you think that Billie Eilish house that they had, which got destroyed because of 2020 event, got scrapped. So that house that was in the Shrek building, could they bring that back?
Yeah.
She's a Universal label as well.
Yeah. So it makes it. I mean, the thing is, they can't obviously do that for everybody because not enough of the musical artists are in that kind of sphere, are they?
That's a simple change. Any artist they've got, make sure that one of your hit songs has a horror-esque video to it. Mm. Job done.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the thing is, you know, The Weeknd released a series of videos that told a narrative strand, but were all very horror-influenced. Mm. Billie Eilish, her videos are more all over the place, but her music is definitely, suited for the event. So, yeah, I guess all you need is one spooky song or one spooky music video, and you can probably get a house too.
I mean, well, I was told that house was going to be like properly scary as well. That's what I was told. I mean, she designed it, and they just let her have free reign. And apparently, it was pretty, pretty chilling. Well, apparently,
the thing is, she was a fan of the event, right? Mm-hmm. So what you need is either somebody who has proven, through other media that they could be used in that event, or you have, we've had people like Alice Cooper associated with the event before as well, and Slash. Mm. So all you need is somebody who is like, I'd love to do a house for Halloween Horror Nights.
I've got the perfect guy, right?
Go on.
The house idea, they take you into this room, they strap you into these chairs, you get the old Clockwork Orange eye things that keep your eyes open, and then you watch Rob Zombie's Monsters for 2 hours.
Oh, no.
Hey, that's scary.
That sounds like an escape room situation.
Yeah.
So with
Rob Zombie's commentary in the background on how the film's made.
And his wife just staring at you the whole time. Waiting for you to say something about writing performance.
What's that guy? Is it Leighton Eversoul or something, his name, on YouTube?
I don't know.
He does like a real technical deep dive of films.
All right.
But he did one of Monsters, and he pulls no punches as well.
Oh, really?
And there was like one shot, there's like this section where you've got this off-camera moment where Rob Zombie's gone, yeah, that'll do, that's done, right, next scene. But you get this really great shot of the village that they built for the Monsters, and in the background there's a high-speed train going along. How much did the production crew really not give a crap? They built the set next to a live train line.
it does sound a lot like, because I only watched this recently for the first time, but I watched Ed Wood, and I believe that Rob Zombie's directing style was just like Ed Wood's. Oh yeah, that's fine. What, you don't want to do another? No, we got the take, it's fine, move on.
Exactly, watch it, honestly, that's exactly what he says. That'll do,
Pig. That'll do. So what else, if anything, Ryan, stood out for you from the event?
I mean, I do love the atmosphere. I think on a Wednesday, it does have a great atmosphere. We only did it the one night. Last time I was there on the Friday, it was just chaos. I didn't really enjoy the atmosphere of a Friday night. But the Wednesday night, there's lots of, I think it's a lot more positive. Feels a bit, not that it feels unsafe, I think it'll be harsh on Universal, but it feels a bit more like a safer, like community driven event on a Wednesday, and especially that early on in the season. And I just enjoyed, like, we chatting to a few people, having a few drinks, like just the whole evening. Like when do you get to do that? Like on a whatever, especially now that obviously since having kids, that's a rarity. I do enjoy the houses. I thought you know that they were. I'm not saying they were bad, but they certainly weren't as good as the previous years. But I would never go to the event and not do Express. I think next time I want to do an RIP tour because I've not done one of those before.
Mm.
But I would never do it without Express now. Like if money was an issue, I probably just wouldn't go to the event.
Mm.
Wow. To be honest, it's just too much. Some of the queues were just insane. I can't. I think like 150 minutes was one of them, and you kind of walk past bits of it when you're in the Express, and it was raining, and I'm just like, there's no way for a 3 minute house.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. So when we've done it before, we did it for the last time we did 4 nights, and we had Express on a Friday, I think. And used it a handful of times. We didn't even use it the whole night. I think if you're going for one night, I think Express is completely essential. And you guys both
mm-hmm.
did that for those reasons. When I'm going for, you know, if I'm going multiple nights, I don't mind queuing. Because at the end of the day, if I'm going there for 3 nights and there's 10 houses, I've only got to do 3 houses a night. If I was really unlucky, like I've never gone to a night without an Express and done 3 houses. Like,
yeah,
never. Always done more than 5. But yeah, if you're going for one night, I completely get it. Yeah, it's yeah, I think that's just something that people need to kind of consider. But for me, when I've been going for multiple nights and having Express, it's been almost too much. Because the thing is, I like to go through the houses to, you know, at least twice, maybe a couple of houses a third time, maybe. But that's it. Like, I'm not one that wants to go through a house 4 or 5 times. Mm. So, you know, I think if you're one of those people, then yeah, you'll need to have Express because, you know, you've got time to then go through it twice if you wanted to in one night, but if you're wanting to queue again, I guess. But yeah, but it's interesting that you've both said the same thing there. So look, we know we can probably guess at what's going to be there next year if we go away and do our homework. My personal feeling of what I've seen is that I'm gutted I missed the Weeknd's house because I like his music anyway. I like his music videos, and what I've seen of the house looked great. The other houses, what I've seen of them, didn't really do too much. So initially I was quite disappointed to not be going this year, but the more I've kind of looked at it and heard what people have said, I don't feel I've dodged a bullet, because I'm sure if I was there, as you say, Ryan, you know, you can have a good time and stuff, but it doesn't, you know, and you both kind of like said the same thing, it doesn't really sound like a vintage year, which is a shame, but under the circumstances is probably where we're at. I guess the question now is, where do they go from here? Because they're in the business to make money. You both said you went on a Wednesday and it a different Wednesdays and it was rammed, so they're clearly doing okay on people going to the event.
Going back to what you were saying earlier, I think Stranger Things took it from being a very successful regional Halloween event to being a must-do for almost all the population of Central Florida, plus every tourist.
Yeah.
So on that basis now, I mean, the demographic is definitely younger than it was.
Demogorgon.
Them as well.
Little Stranger Things humor there, people.
Yeah. So the tribute store, for example, has a queue of its own now. And mad. It's just a giant conga line all the way through it.
It's a secret house.
It is.
Yeah, it's mad, yeah.
It is. It's crazy. I mean, I don't know how anyone can buy anything in there just because you're sort of like being pushed all the way through it all the time. You know, it's so successful for them now. I mean, they really do need to pull their finger out for next year, in my view.
So I guess the problem could be, without a Stranger Things, you know, like this was the second year now without Stranger Things they've had in a row. Now, Stranger Things was the biggest TV event of the year. Right? I don't know many people that didn't watch Stranger Things this year when it came out. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, my 9-year-old blitzed through it. Who only a few years ago we had to drag out of Trolls crying her eyes out because she was scared of Poppy Troll being captured by some spiders. And she blitzed through, you know, Stranger Things in about a month and a half. That's obviously brought people to the event. It brought Ryan to the event. It's brought many other people to the event that wouldn't have gone before. I'm not saying that it's the savior of the event, because I mean, we've had that before with The Walking Dead, and we saw what happened with diminishing returns there. But I guess how many people are going to keep going to the event, which is obviously not getting any cheaper, if they don't have the same level of enjoyment as they have done previously? Does that make sense?
I mean, this year, definitely, I guess before going into this year, I was like, I'm going to go next year 100%. After this year, I still enjoyed it, but I would be less inclined to, before the Chucky announcement at least, less inclined to spend what is quite a lot of money for essentially a long weekend. Because realistically, I'm not going to Orlando for 2 weeks every year now. It's not going to happen.
Mm.
Chucky has changed that somewhat for me personally, but without that, it wouldn't even be entering my mind, to be honest.
Well, and sometimes that's all it takes, right? Again,
yeah.
That is what brought you to the event in the first place, was one house. Everything else
definitely
was a bonus, but that's what brought you to the event. So the thing is, what they've done in the past is something has brought people in, you know, whether that's the 20th anniversary where they had Freddy, Jason and Leatherface as, you know, icons with houses and stuff. That obviously brought a huge horror crowd in for the first time. But what you need to do is keep up that level of enjoyment, of excitement. And if you're not going to have a big IP to do that, then you've got to make sure that the experiences you give guests is up to that level. And it sounds like this year on that front it failed. So I do wonder, based on people's experiences this year, you know, I've already seen other people say they might not go next year. Now, I've never seen that after an event before, that they feel that way. So they've either got to bring in a big icon, and you know, when we first heard that announcement about Chucky, like, everyone was talking about it in our little group. And people were generally quite excited by it, but that wouldn't be it for me personally. That's just my thing. But it could be enough to bring people back. I don't know.
The thing is, they didn't have that sort of marquee IP to bring people in. And they couldn't use, probably for licensing reasons, they probably couldn't use Michael Myers to be that big draw on all the marketing either. So why didn't they just bring Jack the Clown back?
Well, you know, we've said so many times over the years, you've created your own horror icons, which are tied to this event, that you've done nothing with. Them making a Jack film is going to cost them a few million dollars. You know, horror is, as we know, is one of the cheaper forms of you know, films to make, right? I mean, it's not a property they'll ever be able to have at Halloween Horror Nights, right? But I've seen Barbarian twice. saw it at home, and then a friend wanted to go and sit at the cinema, so we went and saw it at the cinema. And that's a cracking film with a budget of about $3 million. I think it went up to $3 million after Disney got involved in it. And that film has done about $50 million worldwide.
Well, okay, same as that Terrifier. That was made on a shoestring, wasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, you know, $50 million is a huge amount, but if a film's cost you, like, less than $5 million, it's over 10 times your investment. And you've probably not had to pay that much in marketing for it either.
You have a dozen of them through the year, you'll make as much money as an Avengers film.
Right.
Yeah.
Without all the performance. So the thing is, it's so stupid that they're not doing it. And if they made a Jack film, right, put it direct on Peacock, doesn't matter, right? You put a Jack film out there, that is going to draw people's attention when you announce him as being at Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah.
They've really been successful creating these characters and then just doing bugger all with them, except for 6 weeks of a year.
I mean, Peacock has the barest amount of stuff on there about Halloween Horror Nights. I mean, I would be throwing all sorts of content on that service to do Halloween Horror Nights to market the event.
The making of.
So many videos they could just chuck on there, you know, it would cost them nothing.
The making of Halloween Horror Nights. Right? Why is there not a documentary? You know,
they've got the ability to do it. They've got the crew.
Literally, go in there with a camera crew into a production meeting of, you know, blue sky ideas for next year's event. All the ideas, seeing people come up with their concepts, you know, what they want to achieve. Then the construction of said houses. You know, all of it, like, this stuff could be done on a shoestring.
They now make all their own commercials for it. So they've got all the staff in-house that could do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, we see, you know, I mean, I love the adverts that they do in-house. You know, I do think they're a really good laugh. If you know enough about the behind the scenes of Universal, those adverts are full of great Easter eggs, aren't they? With people that you don't know, but you do know. But you don't know that you know, unless you know. you know, they always make me smile. You know, to see Bill and Ted pop up chatting together, or to see, you know, Mike, or obviously Mr. Furious. You know, it's great. It's great. They do a really good job. And they're entertaining adverts as well. That's the thing. It's not just they've just filmed them. Like, they are, they're scripted well, they're shot well. You know, they look like a decent production. They don't look cheap. So they've clearly got the talent to do it. I think if you want to move away from other people's IPs, and I get it, right? Licensing must cost quite a lot to get them. Then you want to sell merchandise, you're going to have to give a cut to them as well. If you get the agreements to put them on, and we've seen over the years, you know, where they've not had the license to make merchandise for houses, so just left off the official lists. So if you want to move away from that, fine, but then create your own stuff, because they haven't got enough in the canon, I think, that will draw people in. Give us Jack the Clown.
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, I would love it. I absolutely love it if they did a deal with Warners. Because obviously Warners has got so much content, they don't have a clue how to use it.
Well, yeah. I mean, what did they? How many years did they run that event? Two.
Horror Made Here, yeah.
You know, and you're right. They've got a great back catalogue. I mean, we keep hearing rumours about them possibly being sold on. I'm not convinced because of the back catalogue more than anything else. I mean, what they're producing nowadays is pretty crap, isn't it? Let's be honest. Most of the content coming out of the House of Warner isn't great, but their actual archive is full of, you know, great movies and great IPs. But as you say, they're not doing anything with them. So there's a whole world of stuff that they could, if Universal was able to get their hands on it.
They're not even making movies out of their own IPs.
No. No, very, very true. Okay, well, I think, unless there's anything else, Ryan, you wanted to add about your Universal trip?
No, I think that was everything.
Okay. Well, I think that's us done. But thank you both so much for coming on and talking about your trips and your experiences at Halloween Horror Nights. And it's going to be interesting because, obviously, P-Dubs went to Hollywood and Mr. D went to the drag end of Halloween Horror Nights. I think, didn't he go for like the last few nights?
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how his experience was in comparison. Because I did hear, like, during the event, you know, things were kind of improved, as we've seen in previous years. But yeah, it's not really the answer, is it? But it'll be interesting to hear what their experiences are. So we will do that on the next episode. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen. And thank you, dear listener, for listening. And we'll be back next month, if not sooner, with another episode of this podcast. So look, do yourself a favor. It costs you nothing to subscribe. Subscribe to the feed, because as soon as you do, when a new episode comes out, if it comes out early, you're going to hear it first. So do that. And we will see you next time.
See you later.
Ciao, ciao.
This podcast is a That production and part of the After Dark Podcast Network.